Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link on Thursday, July the 26th. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura. Thank you for joining us live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up, South Africa urges leaders at the BRICS summit in Johannesburg to include developing countries in the fourth industrial revolution.
We must ensure that mastery of the fourth industrial revolution does not become the exclusive preserve of just a handful of countries.
Cyril Ramaphosa is the president of South Africa.
And a constitutional court in Uganda is in session issuing a verdict on whether or not to limit the age of the president.
Once the principle is said that parliament has a right to amend any article of the constitution simply by voting yes, there would be no limit to their demands. Nothing would stop them from amending the constitution, provided that they would be members for life upon death. Their parliamentary seats would be inherited by their children.
And vote counting is still underway in Pakistan, but preliminary results put former cricketer Imran Khan's party on the lead.
These stories, plus your responses on our Facebook and WhatsApp posts shortly after we hear what has been happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyingi with DW News. Over 700 African migrants have stormed the border fence separating Spain's territory of Ceuta from Morocco to get to Europe. Spanish authorities have described the incident as one of the most massive and violent crossings in recent times. 130 migrants sustained injuries. The former cricket star and longtime opposition leader Imran Khan has claimed victory in Pakistan's election amid accusations of vote rigging by rivals. In a live television address, Khan promised to fight corruption and balance relations with the U.S. that would be beneficial for both countries. Khan's PTI party is still expected to fall short of an overall majority. He is positioning himself as the next prime minister, although the official result is yet to be announced. Chinese President Xi Jinping has urged fellow leaders of the BRICS emerging economies to fully reject protectionism. President Xi Jinping made the remarks in South Africa during their annual summit, in which the United States is being criticized for escalating tariffs on foreign goods.
The tide of the times is surging forward. We therefore have a firm grasp of the trend of our times, deepen our strategic partnership, and consolidate our cooperation framework that are underpinned by economic, political, and security cooperation. Only in this way will we turn our vision into a reality and build a community with a shared future for humanity.
Now, the Trump administration's trade war with China and other major trading partners has given focus to the summit to rally support for what Xi Jinping called common prosperity. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The governor of a Nigerian state badly hit by violence between farmers and herders has left President Muhammadu Buhari's ruling party after a wave of defections by lawmakers. Samuel Otom, who was elected as governor of Benue State in 2015, has been openly critical of the government's response to the deadly clashes in his state that have so far claimed the lives of 1,300 people since January. Now to Kenya, where a 10th black rhino has died after a botched attempt to move some of the critically endangered animals from the capital, Nairobi, to a new game reserve. Tourism Minister Najib Balala said the animals died from stress intensified by salt poisoning. The minister termed it as a pure negligence by the officials in charge following the death of 10 out of the 11 rhinos relocated. The officials involved have so far been suspended.
So we are sad and we are disappointed with some of the officers who should have taken responsibilities, and they didn't take their work seriously. They delegated to junior officers, including chairing the final translocation steering committee meeting. The DG should have taken responsibility to counter-check and verify that process.
That's Kenya's tourism minister, Najib Balala. For more news and information, please visit our Facebook page, DW Africa, or our website, dw.com. My name is Jane Nyingi.
If you are just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program, and I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Wanji Komwaura. A very warm welcome to you listening to this program on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And some of you out there, Chonta, Malinga, you are responding, and you have Alhaji, Jobe, Thailand Cole. Thank you all guys for joining this program. Now, leaders of the BRICS bloc signed a declaration supporting an open and inclusive multilateral trading system as envisaged by the World Trade Organization.
Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa have found a collective voice championing global trade at the three-day summit, vowing to fight unilateralism and protectionism in the wake of tariff threats by US President Donald Trump. Addressing delegates in Johannesburg, the leaders also stressed the need for BRICS countries to join the fourth industrial revolution. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Speaking one after the other, the presidents of the five BRICS countries called on all member states to ensure that their countries embrace new technology. This was in line with the year's 10th BRICS summit theme, BRICS in Africa, collaboration for inclusive growth and shared prosperity in the fourth industrial revolution. In his address, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa warned countries that were ignoring the industrial revolution, saying they were set to fail in solving problems of the changing world.
We must ensure that mastery of the fourth industrial revolution does not become the exclusive preserve of just a handful of countries. We must promote inclusivity, diversity, and cooperation.
This was also emphasized by the Russian President, Vladimir Putin, who said it was only through pursuit of new technology that the BRICS countries are going to be able to reduce the cost of industrialization and maximize production.
BRICS has a unique play in the global economy. This is the largest market in the world, and the joint GDP is 42% of the global GDP and keeps growing, 22.3%.
In his speech, Chinese President Xi Jinping urged the BRICS countries to ensure its citizens are beneficiaries of science and industry to enable them to play a crucial role in development.
Closer economic cooperation for shared prosperity is the original purpose and priority of BRICS cooperation. We need to step up trade, investment, economic, financial and connectivity cooperation to make this pie still bigger.
The organization invited several leaders of the African continent in line with its focus of treating Africa as an equal partner and major investment destination. The summit ends tomorrow.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg.
Now we head over to Pakistan, where a slow vote count has sparked accusations of rigging in the country's national election, with some rejecting the results before they've arrived. Cricket star Imran Khan and his party have declared victory before final results are announced.
Now, election officials said a technical glitch in the electronic reporting system delayed the result, with staff now counting ballots by hand. DW Shamil Shams joined me earlier from Islamabad, and he started by talking about the current state of the vote count.
See, unofficial results have clearly shown that Imran Khan's Tehreek-e-Insaf party, the Movement for Justice, has got the maximum number of seats in the National Assembly, which is the lower house of parliament in Pakistan. However, the official results are yet to come, but Imran Khan, just an hour ago, had a victory speech in which he set out his agenda, what he is going to do when he becomes prime minister.
Do you foresee an escalation of violence?
It is likely, because an Islamist party, which last year in September or October seized Islamabad on the issue of blasphemy, the finality of Prophet Muhammad, also said they will take to the streets because they said that the polls were rigged. So if that happens, they are known for their kind of violent protests. The problem here at the moment in Pakistan after this election, okay, Khan has won the election, but there are rigging claims, and also that the country has become more divided, more polarized, more split than ever. I spoke with some defense analysts, retired military people here, and I asked them if Pakistan needs some kind of reconciliation now. All the stakeholders should sit together and talk to each other because Pakistan faced immense crises, acute water energy crisis. There's a militancy issue in Pakistan. So somehow Pakistan needs some kind of a stability, political stability. Imran Khan, is, in his victory speech, kind of hinted that he would not victimize political opponents. But we have to see how things unfold from here.
So if it does happen that Imran Khan is declared the elected prime minister, how much is he going to tackle this power balance between the civilian government and the military?
Imran Khan is unlikely to challenge the military supremacy in Pakistan. He has been in good books with the army generals. There has been allegations that the army was backing him. And the crackdown on former Prime Minister Sharif's party is kind of an indicator that he got like an edge in the election. Obviously, Khan's party is also popular. Nobody's denying that. He has increased his support throughout these years. But he is very unlikely to challenge the dominance of the military in Pakistan.
Shamil Shams from DW's Asia English Desk speaking to me earlier from Islamabad. Now back to the African continent, to Uganda, where attention has been drawn to the usually sleepy town of Mbale, about 225 kilometers east of the capital Kampala. The country's constitutional court is still in process of delivering its ruling on the presidential age limit petition at the High Court.
The constitutional amendment last year removed age limits on the presidency, which was originally 75 years, and sought to extend the term of parliament and president from 5 years up to 7 years. DW's Alex Gita is following the proceedings, and he starts by bringing us up to speed with what's happening on the ground.
We have 5 judges involved in this case, and so far we've heard from at least 3 of them. These include Justice Chebarion Barishaki, Justice Musoke Elizabeth, and Justice Kenneth Kakuru. These are deliberating on 2 main issues. So the first 2 judges, that was Chebarion Barishaki and Musoke Elizabeth, also said that Parliament was supposed to consult the people before amending this. But they agreed that it was right to remove the presidential age limit because they consulted their people, and those who consulted people and said that to go ahead and remove the age limits were more than those who said don't remove the age limit.
And now that we are still waiting for the third judge to speak, from what has already been said, what is the likely outcome?
Well, what's most likely going to happen is that these judges will uphold the presidential age limit. We will agree with Parliament to removing it, but most likely they are going to ask Parliament to reinstate their term of office from 7 years back to 5 years. The third judge, Justice Kenneth Kakuru, came out very strongly and attacked the Parliament for behaving like the former president of Uganda, the late Idi Amin Dada, who declared himself the life president of Uganda, and ideally you could do anything because he was at the top of the government of Uganda. Justice Kakuru, let us listen to him and hear what he said.
It could abolish elections and declare its current members to be members for life. This is what Idi Amin did when he declared himself life president. Once the principle is said that Parliament has a right to amend any article of the Constitution simply by voting yes, there would be no limit to their demands. Nothing would stop them from amending the Constitution, provide that they would be members for life upon death. Their parliamentary seats would be inherited by their children. They cannot do so because the Constitution put this court in place to stop them. This court shall not stand by and let our country's democracy and hard-won values set out in their Constitution wither on the vine. That will not happen on our watch.
That was Judge Kenneth Kakuru in that report by DW's Alex Gita in Mbale, Uganda, where the proceedings are still underway and we are monitoring this story for you.
And a quick response from Chonta Malinga. He says this man wants to rule Uganda forever. Thanks for those responses and keep your comments coming on Africa Link.
Welcome back. You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Wanjiko Mwaura.
And my name is Abubakar Jallo. Thanks, everyone, to those of you who are listening to us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, especially those of you who just joined us now lately. I can see Henry Chiapa and Sam Osuju. Thank you, guys. We are always happy to have you on Africa Link.
Of course. And please remember, sharing is caring. So click on that share button so that you can catch up on what's coming up in the next 15 minutes. From brain drain to brain gain, what's behind the mass return of many Senegalese back home?
Europe has given us a lot, but it's not what it used to be. Here, when we arrive, it feels like everything we touch is an innovation, and that's the difference.
And as Zimbabwe prepares to go to the polls to vote for a new president next week, we find out what white minority Zimbabweans feel about the election in their country.
But before that, let's head to the small West African nation of the Gambia, where President Adama Barrow has come under heavy criticism following his announcement to build 60 additional mosques across the country every year.
Now, the Gambia is a predominant Muslim country, but the president's critics have accused him of being out of touch with the reality on the ground and described the announcement as misplaced priority. Omar Wale reports from Banjul.
Through the youth movement every month, I will build 5 mosques across the country, making it 60 mosques annually. The funds for the project are already secured.
President Adama Barrow's announcement echoes a December 2015 proclamation by exile ex-president Yahya Jammeh, which declared Gambia an Islamic state.
Given their own respect, they rather celebrate Christmas or whatever will continue.
But when Barrow ousted Jammeh in 2016 elections, he overturned his proclamation and returned the country back to a secular republic. However, Barrow's decision to build 60 more mosques hasn't gone down well among people with other faiths. His critics say he should have prioritized other issues such as fixing the economy rather than building mosques.
I don't think the president should be involved in the business of building mosques, because as the president, we task him as Gambians to prioritize the needs of our country. Building mosques is not a development issue for me. And if he's building mosques, how many churches is he building? How many temples is he building?
As a Gambian and as a Christian, for that matter, I'm not the least pleased with making such kind of statement, because it reminds me of, you know, Jammeh declaring this country an Islamic state, knowing fully well that this country is a secular state.
Every corner of this country that you go, you will find a mosque there. And even the first row, to feel it is a problem. So President Barrow must concentrate on the priorities. We elected him to reform our constitution, you know, to rebuild our country, not to give us mosques. And besides, the Gambia is a secular state. So why building mosques? Is he also going to build churches for the Christians?
I don't think it's a good move for him to make, because Gambia is a secular state. You have both Christians, you have Muslims, and you have different cultures. So you doing a thing as a president, you should consider everybody as a Gambian, not just one part. So I think he should have concentrated on other areas that are pressing to the Gambians and not constructing mosques all over the country. Allahu Akbar,
Allah. Barrow, a Muslim, is accused by many in other religious denominations of marginalizing them and following the footsteps of the former president Jammeh. Mamadou Kanté is a pastor at a Presbyterian church of the Gambia.
When it comes to Jammeh declaring Gambia as Islamic state and Barrow coming saying that we are back to secular, so to me, it doesn't make sense, because even today as we speak, you go to the Justice Department, you want to register a church, they will tell you that, look, there is a ban on church registration. Since Barrow took over, I have been there on several occasions, and they always tell me that, look, there is a ban on church registration.
Despite criticisms, President Barrow remains resolute. He reaffirmed the commitment of his government to the promotion and advancement of religious tolerance and equality in the Gambia. He insisted that all religions are treated equally, saying even in his cabinet, he has Christians that he has so much respect for. he responded to his critics, calling them detractors and hate mongers.
That was Omar Wali in The Gambia.
Now a response from you, Alhaji Jobe. You said President Barrow has no development agenda for The Gambia. He has caused a big religious debate in the country.
What do you think about this topic? Please contribute on our Facebook page. And now we head over to other comments still on this topic. Arthur Anunuso says, this is the epitome of African stupidity.
That's his opinion, definitely.
Yes.
We have Habib Magula. He says, I support him. With God, everything is possible. It is nice to rule over a country with people who are God-fearing.
And Livingston Gerard says, religion is a very big problem in Africa. Black people prioritize it too much.
Keep your comments coming on Africa Link.
Use on. Now, first came the expats. That's qualified graduates or young people looking for jobs abroad. Now, it's the time for the reparts, that smart black elite European or Afro-Americans who choose to head home to the African country that they have historic ties to. Today, the continent is home to some of the world's fastest growing economies, and motivated, skilled entrepreneurs are hurrying to play a role in their development.
Now, from brain drain to brain gain. The diaspora is Africa's secret weapon. In Senegal, recruitment agencies and social clubs targeting so-called repats or returnees, as they are called, are soaring in popularity and make settling a little easier, as Emmanuel Lande found out.
Spread out across the world, the African diaspora is made up of around 170 million people. That's almost the population of Nigeria. Some were either born and raised outside their home country, others migrated to Europe or the US and other parts of the world, and some moved abroad to study. The African Union has actually labelled them the sixth region of Africa. Today, diasporians or repats are looking for opportunities on the continent rather than off it, and are coming back, so to speak.
Pourquoi le Sénégal? Parce que déjà d'une, c'est chez moi.
Why Senegal? Because firstly, it's my home, it's my country. It was an obvious choice for me. I've always told myself that I would go back to Africa one day or another, and especially back to my home, to try to create something.
Senegalese Fad Diallo was born in Dakar and spent 22 years living in Paris. She returned to Dakar 2.5 years ago.
Europe has given us a lot, but it's not what it used to be. Europe is already a well-oiled system where everything already exists. Here, when we arrive, it feels like everything we touch is an innovation, and that's the difference. We really feel like we're bringing some added value.
Before coming back to Senegal, Fa, herself a mother of two, took courses on early childhood development. Her goal was clear from the start, to set up a childcare training school in the capital. She has a dozen pupils, and already, just halfway through the year, kindergarten schools have come to Fa to recruit her students. Across town, 36-year-old Yannick Mandiba, born in France to Cameroonian parents, moved to Dakar 18 months ago. He's the first marketing manager employed at one of the Premier League football school and leisure centres in Dakar that rents out football pitches. He too says the joy of moving to Africa is being able to develop something from scratch.
I think there are a lot of things that you can start here, and it is very rewarding to do a job like that, since in other countries you can have jobs that are interesting, but will be less invested in them. It makes less of an impact on you.
Some repats don't even mind earning less because in Europe or the US they weren't making the kind of impact they aspired to. 76% of young Africans in the diaspora are willing to get involved in the continent's development, according to a 2014 study by a French think tank. They're just doing it differently to how their parents did it, says Awa Lee, the founder of a networking club in Dakar, which launched a few months ago.
We immigrants, our parents and ourselves, the children, have always contributed to the development of the country, except that our parents' generation was happy to send money to build infrastructure in the villages or send ambulances, for example. We have the same desire to participate in the development of the country, but in a different way.
She created the club for people like herself, who left everything they've built up in Europe to start over in Dakar and need a little support and guidance. With their talent, energy, skills and technological know-how, diasporians are furthering economic progress in Africa by coming to work and, when possible, creating jobs.
Emmanuel Lande with that report from Dakar.
Speaking out.
Leading political parties contesting in Zimbabwe's July 30 elections are seeking to accommodate minorities. One such group is the white minority community, who now feel more accommodated in political processes than in previous years.
Their community, mainly composed of former commercial workers who lost land during the controversial land reforms in early 2000s, generally kept away from elections. However, following the deposition of former long-time ruler Robert Mugabe last November, the environment seems to have changed. From Harare, DW's correspondent Privilege Mshangiri filed this report.
White commercial farmers have been a target of systematic hate speech used as ammunition to fuel campaign rallies by the ruling ZANU-PF party. But unlike his predecessor, Robert Mugabe, Zimbabwe's incumbent president Emmerson Mnangagwa is trying to mend relations with the former white farmers.
I am saying we should cease to talk about who owns the farm in terms of color. We should cease talking about that. A farmer, a black farmer, a white farmer is a Zimbabwean farmer. We should look at that way.
The farmers are becoming more vocal and visible in politics. Jason Ditliffs, a farmer in Zimbabwe's Midlands province, is running for a rural council seat on the ruling party ticket.
Us as a minority, we like to hold back. You know, I think we need to be involved on the ground so our grievances can be aired through the proper channels.
Although political parties are promising to rationalize the chaotic land reform program, farmers are still worried about land rights and investment security. Ben Gilpin, director of the Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union, explains.
We need to be honest in looking at what has happened on the land. We need to have a dialogue that puts the land in the hands of genuine farmers and allows the country to move forward. And those farmers need to have a full bundle of rights that will drive it. And those farmers must be accountable to the citizens of Zimbabwe for the resources that are in their hands.
Political analyst Rashwit Mukundu views the inclusion of the minorities as a positive step.
There is a growing interest across the racial divide in Zimbabwe to participate in this election. And this is the beginning, I think, of a reintegration of the Zimbabwean society away from the divisive politics of former President Robert Mugabe.
The inclusion of minorities like white commercial farmers could be a good sign for Zimbabwe's agriculture revival if it is sustained beyond the July 30 elections. It is a chance for the country to regain its glory as Africa's bread basket.
That was Privilege Mshanyiri in Zimbabwe.
Now, let's take you to one of our main stories for today. That is the story we are monitoring, which is the debate at the Constitutional Court, where the court is due to pass a ruling on the presidential age limit. We have Mr. Black, who says Uganda should have age limit of 60 years, give place for the young people to fix the nation.
I have a question back to him. When is the youth going finally to get into leadership positions? Because we are often being told, oh, you're the future for tomorrow. Yes. When?
When is the youth going to have it future?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. So maybe this 60 years is a good suggestion.
Yeah.
We also have Jawo, who says, this is actually funny and sad at the same time.
And Jacqueline Mueni says, Museveni should let millennials rule. He is too old to lead effectively. That's basically an answer to your question there.
Thank you very much for keeping it Africa Link. This is that's on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Please remember, always share, eh?
Definitely share all of what you find on our Facebook page, DW Africa. It's been a pleasure having you on Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And my name is Wanji Komwaora. Until next time.
Bye now.